And welcome to another edition of the Unbalanced Note, episode 4. We took a week off, you know, we had things going on. But yeah, we're here back with more music, news, podcasts, one-hit wonders, main events. It's so good. The drugs have entered our systems. It's hot as shit outside. We finally got our levels where we want them. I'm Brian Kluger with Boomstick Comics. This is the Unbalanced Note on the Multimedia Men podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. The yin to my yang, the hairy chest sitting across from me, Jacob Douglas. How are you, sir?
I was doing great. Now I'm creeped out. That's quite the introduction there.
You're welcome.
How do you know my chest is hairy?
I see that shit.
Safe, yeah. I forget. We're not wearing clothes today.
Yeah, this is the naked podcast right now.
It's hot. He said it's hot outside. This is no pants cast.
No pants cast. Right? I like that. I really enjoy that when we're about to record, right before we're about to record, we got everything set up. The mics are out, the computer, the mixing board.
There's cookies.
We've got cookies and, you know, other things. And Jacob's like, I feel like the Scantron's coming. I feel like I'm about to take a test. I'm about to do horribly on
it. Well, actually, I mean, if I'm looking at the test and I'm seeing cookies, some e-pens, a bag of fun gummies, and like a cell phone, I'm going to ace this test, dude. These are all things. I'm good at all these things, right?
Yeah.
Scantrons and tetherball, right? Those are like extinct now, right? Do people still play tetherball? When's the last time you saw the tetherball?
Actually, a couple months ago, I was at the Lakewood Brewery, and they have a tetherball.
At a brewery. That's a horrible idea.
Yeah, but it's like one of those like that's set in a tire, and it's like duct taped.
Oh,
like,
it's not like a fuck where you can fling it around.
Oh no, yeah, it is that. It's not just like it's not. It wobbles around quite a bit, so you have to be careful.
The pole wobbles around.
Correct.
Oh, that's
an innuendo too. Dude,
I remember like being in elementary school, right, and they had the tetherball thing, and it was like it was probably like 4 feet in the ground, right? Like to get it out of the ground, you'd have to fucking
right.
Four or five of y'all would have to just start shaking the shit out of it. Even then it probably wouldn't really budge. But, man, I remember tetherball was great, dude. You could fuck up people in that game, right?
Oh, yeah. You had to have, like, watch out.
Yeah.
And I really
I bet a kid got, like, choked out by it, right? Like, the string. Like, he got too
That's
close.
That's why there's no more tetherball. Yeah, yeah. Some idiot kid got choked.
And then the Scantron, they did away with that because that was people were trying to think too much. They had to fill in the fucking cue or the circle, right?
Yeah, the square or the circle.
Too much thought, dude.
Did you ever
put it on an app.
Did you ever like not study for a test and there was like 150 questions on a Scantron? Did you just like ever let's like write words out?
Yeah.
Filling out.
Yeah, like Beavis and Butthead did it, right? They turned in their test and it said like Metallica and all the Scantron things. But I remember we had they used to hear this like rumor, right? It was like a fucking, you know, like Bloody Mary type story. And it was like if you took chapstick and you ran it down the side of the Scantron.
Yes, it would.
Yeah, it was like supposed to just fly through the machine.
Did anybody
somehow
do that?
I think I remember someone like they said they tried it, but it didn't work because they used the red chapstick. You had to use like the clear chapstick.
Yeah,
because the red one had some dye in it that like would jam in the machine or something. But I don't know, how does that thing even grade anyway? Like if it just slides through the machine, why would you even get a grade on it? Right, it would just like shoot it right through.
No, I remember that it was chapstick or some shit.
Yeah, like it was, no, that's what they said. It was supposed to be like chapstick or that like fucking. What's that stuff in the jar and you dip your finger in it? Carmax, right?
Rubbers, cement.
Cement, bag of condoms. Yeah, rubbers, dude. You know those things you can blow them up, dude?
Oh, we have a good
show.
You
ever blown up a condom?
Yes, I have. Well, I've blown up a condom and a rubber glove. There's just shit you do when you're growing up.
Man,
you just like
you'd use them, man. What are you talking about wasting the condom like that, blowing it up for, dude?
When you buy like a mega pack, you know, you just
mega
like,
pack. You blew up a lot of fucking condoms.
I did.
We better get that mega pack, dude. We're gonna be. Yeah, man.
For her
what a childhood you must have had.
It was very.
And that's
curious.
So unfortunate about how your grandfather fell off that tower.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, jeez. kind of.
It was during World War II.
Kind of an Eric Clapton moment.
It was an Eric Clapton moment. Speaking of Eric Clapton, in that moment, our main event today is Eric Clapton. We are going to be talking about Eric Clapton.
God, dude. Clapton is God.
There you go. He's still around. He just had an album out. But we're going to talk about his life, his career, his motives, his drugs and alcohol. We're going to talk about
it. We don't need another episode for that.
It's going to be good. And plus our one-hit wonder, which we will divulge to you later on. But first, of course, we have some news. First bit of news out of the gate. I'm not sure. I know how I feel about this. I'm not happy about this, but oh well. Bob Dylan announces a new tour across North America. Interestingly enough, I have seen Bob Dylan quite a bit. And
I'm sure you have.
The last time I saw him, it was just terrible. It was at the Dallas House of Blues. And Bob Dylan doesn't have the voice anymore. He just kind of sounds like a worse Tom Waits.
Well, hold on now. Bob Dylan's never had a voice, so...
Yeah, but he kind of sang. He had the high-pitched kind of...
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But now he sounds like an untrained Tom Waits, but he just talks the words.
Yeah, dude, I've seen Dylan like 3 times, and all 3 times I'm like, man, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. The first time I saw him, I was at Bonnaroo in like 2004, maybe?
Yeah.
Either 2003, 2004, somewhere around there, and he played on the outside stage. Well, all the stages are outside, but on the main stage at Bonnaroo. And it was maybe 3 p.m. or so. He comes on like 45 minutes late, right? And it's like a fucking bar band he's playing with, right? And they're doing like really bad like blues covers and stuff. And Dylan is every like maybe minute and a half walking over to this electric piano keyboard, right?
Yeah.
And just mashing like bam, 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 like randomly 8 keys and then just walks away from it and then starts singing with his back to the audience, right?
Yeah.
So, but people need to fucking know if you're going to see a Bob Dylan show, dude, you're either going to fucking get a really great one or it's going to be dog shit.
Yeah, I think that's the case. His last album was Triplicate and looks like he'll be touring with that.
You know what that is?
What?
That's, I'm pretty sure that's all Frank Sinatra songs.
Oh.
Double check. I think that's what it is, because he's done quite a few like Sinatra albums, but that's what he's trying to do now. He's like this fucking loungy, like, what's he going to protest, you know? Like, he's done it already.
Like, no, yeah.
You can't see, like, Bob Dylan. He doesn't do the 1966 fucking 1974 electric, you know, folky stuff anymore, dude. That ship has sailed a long time ago, you know?
So Triplicate looks like covers of classic American songs recording live with his touring band. So that's what Triplicate is. So yeah, I guess there is.
Yeah, he did like Shadows of the Night is one he did that's Sinatra. And I think he's got 2 or 3, but that's why I thought that Triplicate thing was it. But
so yeah, that's, I mean.
So you've seen him how many times? You've only seen him
3?
Oh, you've seen him 3 times too. Yeah. I saw him when he played at the fucking, that opera house thing that was over here.
Oh yes, yes, I know.
What's
what
that called?
About.
Like not the Meyerson, but
I know.
Maybe it was the.
I'm trying.
I don't know the fucking name of it. CorporateEventCenter.com.
Right. Corporate. Yes, that is correct.
Some gaudy fucking like. Sit at your seat and don't say anything and look straight the whole time.
But interestingly enough, he is touring and he's starting it off August 8th, so tomorrow, but he's starting his tour off in Australia with several shows, then going to New Zealand, and then taking a month or two off, actually, and he's coming and starting his tour in October in Phoenix, which he will make his way towards Texas, playing in Midland, Irving at the Pavilion, Irving, and then going to Tulsa, and then all through Florida, Georgia, Tennessee.
How old is the South. How old is he?
Bob Dylan is, I'll guess.
He's got to be 80.
80, you say? Let's see. Bob Dylan is actually 77.
Close.
Born in 1941 in Duluth, Minnesota.
What's his real name?
He lives in Malibu now.
Bobby Zimmerman. Good old Bobby Z. Maybe his grandfather was also at that guard tower.
Robert Allen Zimmerman.
Yeah, Robert Zimmerman, dude.
So yeah, that is happening. Would you go see him again ever?
Absolutely not. My mom even warned me actually when the year I went to Bonnaroo a couple of years, and when I went, my mom was like, "Hey, well, if you're going to see Dylan, you know, keep this in mind, because my mom is a massive Dylan fan." She's like, "You're not going to get to see what you want to see him do." Like, I love Hurricane, right? Like the Desire album.
Yeah.
You know, the really kind of weird, funkier Dylan albums and stuff. I really like those, but he doesn't do that, man. Like, it's like going to see someone you could see play at the GOAT.
Yeah, it's actually not good. In the last shows I saw,
kind of have to see him, though, because if you've never seen him before, he's a fucking living legend, though.
I mean, correct.
It's Bob Dylan.
Correct.
So he's not going to play Blown in the Wind. I mean, that song has lost its meaning, especially nowadays, dude. Like, there's not going to be a bunch of young kids at a Bob Dylan show trying to become enlightened. And like,
he'll usually play actually, you know what, I'll look up his last set list.
He does a couple of standards, you know, but I mean, it's a lot of this. I guarantee you 80% of the set is shit you've never heard before.
That's most likely very true. Okay, so August 4th, he played in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong.
And he actually played Things Have Changed, Highway 61 Revisited, Simple Twist of Fate, When I Paint My Masterpiece.
Okay, I guess what we should preface this, though, is also the style in which he's doing these.
Yeah, his encore was Blown in the Wind and Ballad of a Thin Man, actually.
Yeah, well, again, the versions that you're hearing of those songs aren't going to be the musically what you're expecting them to sound like.
Right.
There's going to be, like, most of it, I bet, is piano.
Correct. And
he doesn't play guitar anymore. I don't think, the three times I've seen him, he never even touched a fucking guitar.
Right.
And like, when you saw him, was he playing guitar?
He played guitar and a little piano, but mostly he was just kind of singing, but like talking, singing.
Yeah, wandering around the stage.
Right, yes.
He's like, does he know where he is?
Yeah, but like he had to try hard not to run into his Oscar that was on a pedestal right next to him on stage. Yeah, dude,
but here's the thing with Bob Dylan. He's Bob fucking Dylan.
Yes.
Like, if he wants to wander around the stage and talk into the microphone for an hour and a half.
He can damn do well, dude.
Yeah, and if you paid to be there, you're going to stay and witness it because...
Right.
He is one of those people where it's no one will ever reach that level of like mind power and able to like directly communicate with an entire generation of people.
Yeah.
His age and older.
Yeah.
Cause like folk guys got into him, you know, like traditional, you know, when he did the electric, when he switched to electric, a lot of those people started to write him off, you know, but
right.
He just wanted to maintain and still be, you know, relevant, because he had a lot to say.
Yes.
I mean, fucking, he wrote, where do you even start? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Fucking unbelievable, dude.
I like Bob Dylan albums, all along, but I wouldn't see him live.
Man. All you gotta do is listen to All Along the Watchtower.
There you go. Yeah, that's not a Jimi Hendrix song. That's originally Bob Dylan.
Yeah, that, man. There's this girl that I kind of talk to every now and then, and she texted me not too long ago, and she said, hey, did you know that Bob Dylan wrote All Along the Watchtower? And I kind of just wanted to, like, respond back, like, hey, just delete my number. Like, don't, you know, this, don't bark up the tree, you know what I mean? Like, move on to, just move on, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't. No. So I was, hopefully she's not listening to this.
Oh, well, she might.
Yeah, well, good. Megan, I'm talking about you.
Well, good.
In case
her name rhymes with Megan.
Yeah. I'm not saying it isn't Megan either.
True. All right. Moving on from Bob Dylan, speaking of him going on tour, a big concert, Lollapalooza, and I'm curious about what Jacob has to think about this. A 16-year-old who was attending Lollapalooza died. The cause of death is not announced yet, but do you think these people are too young to attend a concert like this?
The people nowadays?
Yes, yeah, nowadays.
They're too stupid to attend it.
Because somebody died, and they're not releasing, but do you think drugs, or do you think it's exhaustion? Do you think it's just...
Well, where is Lollapalooza?
Where is Lollapalooza?
Like, it could... If you... I know there is, like, a lot of, you know, kind of weirdly warm temperature.
I think it's in Chicago.
I think you're correct, too, but it'd be a horrible place to have it.
Considering, yes. So, yeah, it was a young boy
Yeah, it's probably like when Daft Punk was playing or something and he fucking took too much GHB or something, like date raped himself to death. Lollapalooza has lost its... That thing is so far off its main objective and course, it's ridiculous, dude. It's like it's corporate now. Like,
his family was told that he suffered a seizure.
That, exactly, dude. He fucking date raped himself into like a heart attack, man. Because that's what kids do now. They don't like... They eat Tide Pods and stuff, right? Like, they don't take weed to concerts. That's fucking amateur, right? Yeah. Like, how did we get... Where did we get to that point?
Yeah, where did we go wrong here? Well, but my question is, do you think 16-year-olds or maybe 15-year-olds are too young to go to a gigantic concert?
Nah. I mean, anything they're going to encounter at a concert, they've already encountered on a computer that they've had since they were 4 years old. I mean, they've seen it all.
Yeah, like, nowadays, yes.
Well, every kid has a fucking phone, right?
Right.
Why would a parent not go... Yeah, get the hell out of here. Go to a concert. Leave us alone for 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I wonder what they're going to do.
Yeah. Like, who knows?
Well, I know what they're going to do. I would do if I had a kid and I was like, man, I really can't bang my wife as much as I'd like to, right? Like, yeah. And I could get the kid out of here for a little bit. Sayonara, dude. Like, here's an extra 20.
All right.
Lollapalooza. Well, okay. What was the question? Do I think 16 is too young to go to a concert?
Well, a concert of that magnitude. I'm not talking about going to a
festival. You're talking about going to a festival.
Yeah, music festival.
What do you think about that?
My first festival, I was 17, but it was, you know, I saw Isaac Hayes. I mean, but I wasn't, you know, doing Molly or anything like that.
Yeah, you were probably trying to, like... Someone probably gave you a sip of beer and you might have got to hit a joint. Like,
yeah.
That was the worst thing that was going to happen.
Correct.
You might see, like, the old lady's tits next to you, like, yeah. Right? That gets, like, kind of wonky, right?
She's hot,
like,
buttered noodle.
Yeah, dude. Like, fucking Isaac Hayes comes out.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, right, dude? Fucking, you know, it's rubbing up against you and stuff, but, dude, people are wild, man. They're crazy now. But, fucking, who was even at Lollapalooza? It's like Austin City Limits, man. Like... Who would fucking really go to that? Music fans? Those aren't music fans.
Yeah, I haven't been to a festival in forever, so there's no reason to.
Fucking people need to figure it out, man. Like, quit making the rest of us suffer because your shitty taste in music. Like, look up the lineup to Lollapalooza. Okay. You used to go see bands like you could have the Melvins and like Fishbone, and I guarantee it's like fucking Red Hot Chili Peppers and the Killers. I bet. No, I'm serious. Like, it's gonna be some fucking bullshit.
Lollapalooza this year was
start at the top.
The Weeknd, okay. Bruno Mars.
There you go. No, don't even continue. Actually,
okay. There you go.
No, keep going though.
Jack White, Arctic Monkeys, Travis Scott, The National, Vampire Weeknd, Odessa.
Okay.
Logic,
yeah.
Post Malone, Khalid.
Oh, all right, yeah, Post Malone, dude. They throw in the fucking towel, Lollapalooza. I mean,
low on the list is LL Cool J.
Is that supposed to be an improvement?
Chromeo, I haven't heard of him in forever.
It's a duo.
Fucking Will Smith's son, Jaden Smith, for fuck's sake.
And okay, now type in like Lollapalooza 1994.
Okay.
And then go, okay, that's what we're dealing with now. Because, I remember they had Lollapalooza here at the old Bomb Factory in the 90s.
Dallas, 1994.
Yeah, 94. Was that, I couldn't remember if it was 94 or not, but.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, dude, there was probably only like six bands, I bet, though.
1994, holy shit.
Yeah, dude, like, think about what you just said and now fucking ponder.
So back in 1994, in Dallas... The main stage was Smashing Pumpkins, Beastie Boys, George Clinton and P-Funk, A Tribe Called Quest, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and Green Day.
And then
the second stage, Flaming Lips, The Verve.
Yeah, the fucking Verve, dude. Great band.
Oh, my God. So, Black Crowes, Cypress Hill.
Yeah. Crowes, dude.
Jesus Christ.
And then you fucking went Post Malone, The Weeknd, Jaden Smith and the Arctic Monkeys, right? There should have been more people fucking die at Lollapalooza, if you ask me. Right? Like, they should have had Gwar play there and they could have destroyed everybody, right?
In 1996, Lollapalooza had Metallica, Soundgarden, Ramones, Rancid, Shaolin Monk, Screaming Trees, and Psychotica, along with Rage Against the Machine, Cocteau Twins, Waylon Jennings, Cheap Trick, Violent Femmes, and Wu-Tang.
See, that's exactly, it's like the people that, like, buy the legal weed, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're smoking the corporate weed.
Yep.
It's not like... Those people were outlaws, right? Like the fucking cultivators and like the people that grew it when it was illegal, you know? And these people were smart enough to go like, it's a plant. How can a plant be illegal? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, no.
It makes zero sense. But Lollapalooza was when it started, before it got like infiltrated with fucking greed and nonsense.
Calmer, yeah.
All those artists are people that, we're almost like DIY, all from different scenes, right?
Yeah.
But they were all fucking like hard workers, and they weren't into... They all went on to become like get on major labels just because that's what... If you want to be a successful band, that's what you do.
Yeah.
But fucking Lollapalooza drifted away from its like core fucking purpose decade ago, man. Like the whole... It's just lost its like... gusto, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that lineup that you rattled off for the fucking for this year's, you couldn't pay me to sit through
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then with
absolutely
like 50,000 other people?
No way.
Like that are into that?
Yeah.
I'm good. Like,
I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm out.
Maybe he ate Tide Pods. Sorry, your dumbass kid died at fucking Shitapalooza because he's
16.
Yeah, he was eating fucking Ajax. Right? Like
a cocktail of Tide Pods and Ajax.
Yeah, Post Malone fucking told him to shove it up his ear and he fucking exploded.
Ugh, I'm out. All right, moving on. Jazz legend Wayne Shorter has announced Eminem. It's a multiverse-inspired triple album. Wayne Shorter, when he was 15, he wrote and illustrated his own comic book. And then he went on to be 10-time Grammy winner. And he's big into jazz, but he's going to have a new album, and it's going to come with his comic book that he wrote.
With Eminem is on it, though?
No, it's not Eminem. It's called the album was called E-M-A-N-O-N.
Okay. I was sitting here the whole time thinking, like, man... That's got to be a fake article. Like, there's no way Wayne Shorter would do an album with Eminem.
No, it's not. It's
okay, I was worried.
How do you say that?
I don't know.
Eminem.
I'm just relieved that was. I was sitting here thinking that's what you were reading. I was like, this is a fucking joke.
It's going to be released on Blue Note on August 24th, and it will include the original graphic novel. But there's going to be 3 discs of new music from Wayne Shorter, and if you're a big Wayne Shorter fan, that's pretty cool. I actually like that. I would love to see more artists release like a really cool comic or something like that with their record or whatever.
Or just cool records.
Yeah.
Good music is always great.
Cool. No, I'm in.
Jazz is on this like huge upswing right now. Like it's almost...
Pun intended on that.
Right, dude? Picking up what I'm putting down, man.
Oh, yes.
But I bet like jazz is... Wayne Shorter is incredible, right?
Yes.
You know, but they're... Music trends kind of like they move in cycles, right? So like for the last couple of years, it's been like it's trendy to kind of like country, right? When it's like that's kind of always been a thing. Like,
well, I've always liked country as far as the old outlaw country, but nothing
right.
new.
Right, but then in the last like 5 or 6 years, you got like a bombardment, right, of like a Chris Stapleton, Sturgill Simpson, like,
yes,
you know those kind of guys, right? Who are really really good, but there's a lot of young jazz like. Things that are going on right now, and they play to like a lot of the element of like what a Blue Note label would release.
Yeah,
live jazz recordings of a really fucking tight band just getting after it.
Yeah,
of people that are listening to each other play and they're playing off of that, where they're not just trying to play over each other.
Yeah,
right, like almost just strictly improvising. I wonder how many albums Wayne Shorter has.
Let's look,
because he's dude. That guy's been. He's like Herb Alpert, right? Like, he's been fucking making music for like...
He was born in 1933. He is 84
I was gonna
years
say,
old.
I bet he's been making records for 70 years.
And,
that's going to be correct.
He's always been on Blue Note, Verve, or Columbia. But, you know, he's played with Miles Davis and Herbie Hancock and just
dude,
tons
I think
of
he
shit.
Did like an album with like Gene Krupa, maybe? Some really wild drummer, man. Or maybe Elvin Jones. But Wayne Shorter, I bet, has 80 albums.
He has about, I would say 25 albums around there since 1959. Which was called Introducing Wayne Shorter.
Man, I figured he'd have a lot more than that.
This is him, I think, as the leader of the band.
Oh, that makes sense.
So his last album was in 2013, Without a Net, and before that, it was 2005.
It's new music.
Yeah, I'm going to say Eminon. Eminon is his new album.
Something like a phenomenon.
Yeah, right? Something like that, yes. But he practices Buddhism, and he is going to be badass. So I'm in. Wayne Shorter, new album and comic book in the same shit.
I wonder, did he have a hand in like the design of the comic book? Like, is the comic book like him trying to fight ninjas to get to the studio?
So he wrote and illustrated his own comic book in blue ballpoint pen back then.
With a ballpoint pen.
Yeah. So it looks like Randy DeBurke is the artist. But he's had some help with Monica Sly, a screenwriter, and art by Randy DeBurke. But I guess it's kind of him getting it all together to release it, because he wrote this when he was 15. So
damn. So
looks awesome.
He's been sitting on this comic for 60 something years.
Those are the three discs, and the comic is that.
Man.
So I'm in.
That's an incredible, like, that'll be some cool packaging.
Yeah, there's like three different colors. It's orange, purple, green, oh, I guess four, and blue. And it looks like disc one features the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra with a 34-piece ensemble.
The blue one would be the one to get, right? On Blue Note?
On Blue Note, yes. Yes, it would.
Send me a check, Blue Note. Man, these cookies are good.
Thank you. Thanks, Chips Ahoy.
So I was about to say, you make these?
Chips Ahoy Chewies.
They are fucking chewy, ma'am.
All right. Moving on. Are you a fan of Vampire Weekend?
No, I don't like Paul Simon. Right, Graceland, dude. That band, that's a band that, like, me working at the record store, when people sometimes, they ask a question about something, right? And there's a couple of bands where I'm like, God, I can kind of look at someone and just go, man, this person's about to ask me about Vampire Weekend. And I dread it. I dread it, man.
Oh, God damn it. How can you tell?
I can just tell. It's really kind of a certain attitude and, like, clothing style, right? It's kind of like chicks that look like Stevie Nicks now, right?
Well, it's like that, or is it like something like, you know, when you're driving down the road and you see a BMW and you just know that BMW is going to do something asshole-y to
cut you off? Yeah, it's going to cut you off.
You just know, yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. So it's that.
Totally,
okay.
Yeah. You can spot it. It's like a Dave Matthews fan.
Okay, yeah.
Like, you can... You can fucking tell, you know?
Yes, you can.
Birkenstocks and socks. That's how you fucking... No, I don't... Man, Vampire Weekend is... That band confuses me because it is such a derivative of Paul Simon's Graceland.
Yes.
Which I don't really even... I don't really much care for that. Like, it's so... God, I mean, what do you call that, right? Like, it sounds like Caddyshack.
What, Graceland?
Yeah, like it sounds like it's like a comedy album to me.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, the big hit off that one was You Call Me Al.
The music sounds like it's a soundtrack for, like, Dumb and Dumber.
Yes, it does.
You know what I mean? Really, like, it's so quirky and goofball.
It has cartoony sounds, yeah.
Yeah, it's silly. I mean, and so that's what that band, why, what did they do? Their plane crash?
Interestingly enough,
don't sue me.
Allegedly, Vampire Weekend, they played at Lollapalooza and they might have killed this kid. Allegedly, don't sue. They didn't. But during their set, at the end of their set, the main guy Ezra of Vampire Weekend announced that they have a new album and it's in the process of being mastering. So forever, who's listening to us, who loves Vampire Weekend, expect a new album very soon.
You think those people made it to that point of you talking about it? They fucking tuned out as soon as I started on them, dude. I mean, hey, Vampire Weekend fans, you might be all right, but that's all right by me.
Okay, a little bit of weird news. I did not know this, and I forgot about this, but there is a movie called City of Lies, and it's a Johnny Depp film about Notorious B.I.G.
Oh, fuck me. Are you kidding? I fucking hate Johnny Depp.
It stars Johnny Depp as Detective Russell Poole and Forrest Whitaker as reporter Jack Jackson.
I love Forrest Whitaker.
I do too. Ghost Dog. And it's about Bloodsport's Forrest Whitaker. But this is about the investigation of Notorious B.I.G.'s murder. But
it was
pulled from theaters. It was supposed to be released next month, and it has been pulled from theater release.
I thought it was Notorious. Notorious B.I.G.
I've never been heard that, but I'm going to start calling him Notorious.
Yeah, dude.
Notorious, my man.
Notorious.
But because
it's a conspiracy, dude. They can't release the movie because it's like fucking, that's Johnny Depp's Eyes Wide Shut, right? Stanley Kubrick. There's some truth in that movie that fucking Hollywood doesn't want to let out, man. That's why.
True.
Think about it.
Wait, did you say Johnny Depp and Eyes Wide Shut?
That's his Eyes Wide Shut, right? The Kubrick to Eyes Wide Shut, the Johnny Depp Notorious movie, right? he's like exposing what happened.
Well, it's weird because they pulled it and they...
I don't know if that's true. I'm just...
Johnny like
Depp's
it,
not that smart.
He's not.
Horrible guitar player.
This movie... was pulled from release. It's supposed to come out next month, but it's been given no new date. There's no reason why they pulled it. I mean, it was directed by the Lincoln Lawyer director, Brad Furman. So who knows if we'll ever see this?
I wonder, though. I mean, I bet it's either a legal thing, like they didn't get the rights to use as maybe likeness or something, like the family didn't okay it. Because it's like that Andre 3000 movie where he played Hendrix and he couldn't use any Hendrix music.
Yes.
It's a license. Ridiculous. I bet there's some sort of licensing thing.
If it was, I mean, they had to do all this stuff. It was slated to come out in a month.
Yeah, they already filmed it.
They edited that shit. They're marketing. It's coming out. They probably already screened it. But now...
I'm like telling you, dude. Happened. Somebody got someone got fucking enlightened. Like someone, hey,
yeah,
that's who did it. It's like when crazy ass Trump, right, was like, hey, I'm gonna dig into this JFK file, and I want to find out who the fuck what's going on, right?
Right. Because
if you think about it, right, like I just saw this thing with like Louis Farrakhan where he was talking about like all this crazy shit that Trump's doing is actually like having this weird adverse effect on how people are thinking about him, right? Because he's like attacking like. The Department of Justice and like the FBI and shit. Like he's doing things that most people wouldn't dare to do, right?
Yeah.
They could fucking kill you, right?
Yeah.
So maybe there is some sort of weird like Johnny Depp, Notorious B.I.G. like River Phoenix thing, right?
It could be.
Fucking watch. I wouldn't hang out with Johnny Depp, dude. He'll poison you.
Yeah.
Maybe he killed Notorious.
Maybe, Depp, perhaps he did.
Right, dude? And that's why he's been on this bender as of late.
I love this Notorious thing.
I can't take credit for that, dude. That's Abby. Abby actually said that one day, and it cracked me up, dude.
That is so good.
I died laughing, man. Like, fucking...
Notorious.
Well, it was hilarious. I was like, man, because I had never heard that before. she was proud of herself. Then I was proud of her, too.
Yeah, that's good shit.
Yeah, I stole it.
All right,
I give you credit.
I'm going to have to moving on to one of the last bit of news here that's going to make Jacob rip off a shirt in the vein of Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
I like my shirt, dude. I'm not going to tear this.
According to Citigroup, music artists, musicians made only 12% of music industry revenue last year.
We talked
about this.
I told you, and you thought I was talking probably crazy, right?
Artists received only 12% of the $43 billion generated in music industry revenue in the United States last year, according to a new report. The middlemen, the rest of the money went, the 88% went to... the middlemen, such as tech companies, radio stations, and record labels.
That didn't even go there, though. That's probably that's a fucking stacked statement for sure. That money goes, I'm telling you, dude, the music industry is like a fucking mafia, right? It's run by people that don't even like music. Like, why do you think fucking Dylan ain't worried about writing a new great album? Why would he give those people that, you know? Like, I'm just going to cover Sinatra songs. I'm signed to Columbia. I can do any Columbia song I want. Why should I write songs? You know, he's probably owed albums. You know, he has a contract where he has to turn in records, but he ain't got to fucking write a song. I mean, why should he make someone else money off of something he's created? That's what I was saying, dude. That's Spotify, dude.
Well, that's one of the tech companies and radios.
Things. Right, but so it made $43 billion. Right, and Spotify lost how much last year?
Oh, how much did we say? I'm trying to remember.
A fucking shit ton. Yeah. Dude, like $34 million or something like that. So how do you fuck off $34 million on other people's shit? Like, you're already on a gravy train, right? And you're going to shit on it? Like, they're stealing and then, like, telling on themselves.
Well, if the music industry made $43 billion last year and artists only received 12%, that just seems crazy because they're the creators. They're the...
That's exactly my argument.
It means business and just promoters or marketing.
It's big business, dude. Like, but that's what I'm saying. It's run by people that are fucking... money hungry, like fucking Wolf of Wall Street type people, right? Like they're it's almost like human trafficking kind of in a way, because they have all these quote unquote artists that they're in control of, right? So they basically, it's kind of like owners in like the NFL, right? Or like managers and like fucking like Vince McMahon to like WWE. Who makes all the decisions?
He does. He's number one. He wants exactly, to do everything, right? Which is why it's...
Fucking music industry, unless you're an independent artist, right? Like even Willie Nelson kind of early on, like...
Yeah.
Before he did the, you know, pigtail, you know, hippie smoking weed, you know, thing.
Right.
He was a very by the book artist, right? Yeah. Suits, clean cut. And most people are, right? Because you have to fucking play ball with these people, like, if you want to have a career. It's very hard to do it on your own.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, to get back to Lollapalooza, dude, it's the same thing that happened to them, dude. They got infiltrated, but they saw money, right? Perry Farrell, who, like, started Lollapalooza, fucking Jane's Addiction, right?
Yeah.
That's who started Lollapalooza.
Yes.
So he started out, and hey, this was kind of successful, and we made some money, right? He got to profit all that money and then distribute it amongst the other people that he hired, right? So when you start getting other people in the mix, that pot keeps getting bigger and bigger, but you're not putting any more artists into there. All you're putting is lawyers, accountants, fucking personal assistants, manager, this person, blah, blah, blah. Like, it gets way too big. It gets away from the fucking what makes something like that work, the fucking home feeling that you get from it of, like, hey, these are like your comrades and like people that you're friends with, you know? Yeah. It just ceases to get to be at that point anymore because people are so fucking like money, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's got to have money. It's got to fucking make money. So these people that run the music industry, right? They manufactured Britney Spears. Dude, do you think Britney Spears was smart enough to figure out all that shit?
No.
I mean, she was a fucking teenage girl, right? Like, think about it. So in that fucking Notorious Notorious movie, right?
Yeah.
For a movie to get made and pulled, especially of everybody knows who Notorious B.I.G. is,
Johnny
right?
Depp is.
Well, everyone knows who fucking Notorious B.I.G. is.
Correct.
I mean, that's like international thing. And Johnny Depp, I would say Notorious B.I.G. is bigger, no pun intended, than Johnny Depp. He's a more well-known. He's like fucking Bob Marley, dude. Like, they know the image. When they see Biggie, they fucking know, right?
Correct.
So something... There's a lot of inside shit, man, to some stuff we don't know about. Like, and I don't ever want to fucking know about it, really. I mean, I guess that's kind of a problematic thing to say right there, essentially, but... I don't know, man. It's a fucking... It's a wild game to be in, dude. But there's a lot of things where... You know, if you really delve into, like, the industry side of music, like, and where money goes, it's fucking crazy. Like, it's almost like, why would anyone even want to sign up to be a musician just to fuck yourself? Because that's kind of what you're doing willingly and knowingly doing it.
Well, due to these, like, statistics over the last few years, a lot more artists are self-releasing their own music, keeping more revenue in the long run. But yeah, I guess these businesses are going to have to, and I guess they've already started looking to give a more equal share to these artists because, yeah, what's the point in, you know, doing it?
They fucking like kind of strong arm the artists like though into a corner. 'Cause then it's like, well, okay, well, if you want to release it, then you have to release it onto this platform, right? So, like, even Taylor Swift, like, for a long time, I know her music wasn't on iTunes. You know, the Beatles, same way. It was like you had to actually go buy it.
Right.
At Target, right? Or wherever the fuck she sold her stuff. And I'm not a fan, but whoever is moving the pieces for her and pulling the strings behind the curtain, they fucking went, well, hey, this is our product, and we're going to make all the fucking money off of it. Yeah. We're not going to host it on Steve Jobs' goofy fucking music thing and get 10 cents every time someone plays it. You're going to have to go to Target and spend $9 and buy the CD.
Yeah.
And then you have to put it on your computer. But you got to go out and fucking
buy
it. But
yeah, the $9, how much do the artist get out of those?
It's not, that's what I'm saying. Even to put the dent into the thing you're talking about, that $9 gets divvied up between eight other people before it even gets to fucking T-Swift's pocket, right?
Right.
But the point is, these business people got involved and are filtering this fucking shit away from the artist when it should go directly to him. But the artist also didn't go manufacture the CD, print the fucking book in it, yada, 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 right? There's other people that have to get paid, but there's too many people involved now. Like, it's crazy, dude. It's a fucking, it's confusing. Actually, it's really not confusing. It's just stupid.
There you go. It's weird. We'll have more on that, I'm sure, because I know Jacob loves that subject. But moving on.
Who doesn't?
I know. I write. Before the podcast, we want to promote one of our other podcasts, or both of our podcasts. We want to talk about on the Multimedia Men Network, on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, there's also My Bloody Podcast with Preston, Barta, and I. We talk about horror movies, and I also have one called Wrestling is Everything is Wrestling. And these are really fun things to do and to talk about wrestling, horror movies, music, all of that good stuff. You're looking for you want to open up a beer?
No, I don't know. It's a Topo Chico.
Go over to the mantle under the TV on the right hand side by the umbrella. There should be a green on my keychain. Right there. You got it. He's getting his Topo Chico now, fellas. Topo. Is it Topo or Topo?
It's Topo.
Is it El Topo Chico?
No.
How awesome would that be?
Couldn't do that. That's offensive.
That's offensive.
I'm offended. El Topo.
El Topo.
El Chingon. Man, I took a road trip about a year ago up to Indiana. And the whole way there, I was excited to just drink Topo Chicos and drive and, like, look at shit. As soon as I got out of Texas, Topo Chicos don't exist anymore.
Weird.
Real fucking weird. I was disappointed.
That is weird.
Yeah. I should have loaded up, but thought it was a fluke. I had no way of knowing.
Well, thank you.
I could have researched on the internet.
El Topo Chico. but like I was saying before, we do have a wrestling podcast on the network. We do have a horror podcast on the network. And this music one. But to kind of promote the wrestling one, Jacob, before the this Unbalanced Note episode 4 talked about a former wrestler making an album, and I want to bring that up.
Made an album, a instant classic, actually.
Macho Man Randy Savage, back in 2003, made a hip-hop album, a rap album called Be a Man.
Yeah.
And it was released by Big 3 Records on October 7th, 2003. And I don't remember hearing any of it, but the cover is of Macho Man Randy Savage with, like, in black, like, gear, like black clothing, black bandana,
streetwear, bro.
Yes, and like giant chains, like that he's like kind of bring him down. But this is like stereo. It doesn't even look like it's from 2003. But
it looks like it's from like 1993.
I don't remember this at all. Do you remember this album?
I remember it because this was one of the first things where I could remember like figuring out what like cringe meant. Because in like 2003, I was 17 or 18, right?
Okay.
And there were moments where I was like, man, this is like really uncomfortable. Like there were certain things you could listen to, right? Like you would just hear them and you'd go, man, that's awkward. So this is like an awkward, like up positive message rap album, right? Like it's very much, it's not talking about like shooting people and busting caps and fucking like, you know, doing wild shit. Like it's talking about like getting up in the morning and like mowing the yard and stuff. You think I'm kidding. You think I'm kidding, but it's like he, I bet he's, I don't know the exact lyrics, but there's lines where it's like, don't put me down because I'll pick you up. Stuff like that, right? Like very hokey, corny, like kind of like the ball bouncing across the screen.
Okay.
The rap, a rap along, right? Like play some of it, dude. And he had like two or three hype guys with him. Like, so he, and Macho Man was fucking, he's a big dude, you know?
Yeah.
Well, not tall, but you know, he was a fucking powerhouse, you know what I mean?
So.
But he had like some hype guys with him who would like, and music videos are great for him too. He's got some music videos.
Some of the songs feature DJ Kool, Aja, not like AJA, Aja, and Primary Aja. Colors. But like songs like Are You Ready?
Dude.
And Hit the Floor, Tear It Up, Macho Thing with an A.
Play it. Play it. Get you like a 20 second snippet of this. Just listen to it. Don't play it on here for licensing reasons. Right. Well, actually, he's not like he's going to sue us.
No. We'll listen to it later. But I
No.
We got to listen to it now.
You have to get the fucking. Okay. You have to let this hit you, dude. Absorb it.
Okay, hold on. We're gonna listen. We're gonna listen to it for a second.
Dude, you guys are in for a real treat out there in Radio Land.
Let's see here. Randy Savage.
No, Macho Man, dude. He ain't Randy Savage. Rap album. It's under Macho Man.
Okay. So on YouTube, you can listen to his full album, which is a little over 45 minutes. But let's listen to one of the songs called
"We
Be
Need
a Man."
And we want to somehow try to track where our 10 cents goes. Who gets this money? And this is like feud and NWO area. Your pay-per-view event was a joke.
This is a song all about talking shit to Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, dude, and it's like it. Like I said, it, but it's he doesn't. It's not like derogatory, right? Like there's no cursing on it, right?
Oh, correct, correct.
I mean, it's because it is very family friendly rap album. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, I'm gonna kick your butt, right?
I'd have to go back because I mean, I was hardcore watching.
You couldn't fucking make it through that record, dude. If you tried to go, I'm going to get it from front to back on this thing.
I wonder if we can go to a used record store, a crazy used record store, and like see if they have this in the CD.
Oh, it exists on CD for sure, dude. It does that thing. We should fucking put that out on record store day.
Yes. Holy right? shit.
The picture disc, right? Be a Man. I think that's the name of that song, right? Be a Man. And then he had that, what was it? Perfect Friend, which was like his song for Kurt Hennig.
Yes,
Mr. Perfect, for all you out there that don't know anything about anything. Mr. Perfect was like the Bo Jackson of wrestling. Right, like he was Sailboat, and then he played golf, then he went to WrestleMania 4.
Yes,
for all in a day.
But this album has just, it's gotten shitty reviews.
Oh, yeah. God, read a review. Hold on. Let me get my pen here. Let me take my medicine for this one, dude. Because people on the internet are savage. That's why I love them. Like, I couldn't imagine being like a celebrity and getting on the internet and reading about yourself. But people on the internet are incredible. Keep up the good work. The reviews, man, like user reviews, they're great.
How many years of that can one psyche take before his ego is so brittle that it snaps like a dry twig? Be a Man is the answer. The song.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. And that review nails it.
Oh, and there's actually lyrics to it.
Like printed
out? And
after
the lyrics are written out in this review, the writer goes, three words, oh my God.
read what the lyrics are. Just read them aloud.
Hot diggity damn, Hulk, I'm glad you set it off. Set it off. Used to be hard, Hulk. Now you done turned soft. Doing telephone commercials. I seen ya. Dancing in the tights as a ballerina.
Yeah. Oh, that's the one we were playing. Yeah, we heard that.
Oh, it's so funny.
A classic rap spat from the Macho King.
When Macho Man asked the question, are you ready, to hip-hop fans, I'd say the answer most certainly has
Hell
to be
nah.
bold capitalization no. Oh,
Culture God. Vulture, dude. Yeah, Macho yeah. Man Randy Savage, the original Culture Vulture.
That's a fantastic... Yeah, that review is super long, but it's really funny.
That ain't the only great review.
Yeah,
go
look at those. But yeah, that actually happened. We have to bring that up because that's super funny. Before we get to our one-hit wonder, we have to bring up the antithesis of this Randy Savage album to an awesome album that I just found out about. It's a band called Church of the Cosmic Skull. Oh. Jacob just turned me on, fully torqued
to
them.
He's in the cult, dude. He has read the manual, and he's already donated the money, people.
Church of the Cosmic Skull is a band that just seems like they're badass.
They don't seem to be badass. They're great, man. They're like equal parts. Like, if you could take Thin Lizzy, ELO, and like...
Described as a cult pop for fans of ELO, Deep Purple, Fleetwood Mac, and Fleetwood Mac and Queen.
Yeah, oh, totally Queen. The exact total Queen element in that band, too. Because there's like, man, they have like three backup singers, the girls that do the high harmonies and stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, this is an incredible band, man. Like, they're... Well, I stumbled across them... like on YouTube, there was like a, you know, the suggested, I was listening to like Blue Oyster Cult or something, right? And then I just saw this fucking goofy rainbow and then a guy in like a white suit and like this really big hat, like a witch's hat, right?
Correct.
And I was like, what's this fucking pilgrim doing? And so I clicked, man, I clicked the video, right? And like 10 seconds in, I'm like, dude, the Kool-Aid has hit me. Like, whatever these guys are about to do, I want to be a part of it. I'm into it.
Yeah. And no, it's good. So their first album is called Is Satan Real?
Oh, yeah.
And then their newest album is called Science Fiction. They only have two albums.
That's all they need.
But I've listened to maybe 30 seconds of one song, and I'm immediately hooked.
Dude, they are the best. Like, that's the only band, I think, in a very long time, at least 5 or so years, where I actually got excited when I heard them.
Yeah.
I was like, holy smokes. Like, this is fucking banging. Like, it had a really, I don't even know. It sounded like something I had heard before. Very familiar sounding.
Yeah.
But it sounded very fresh. Kind of like, you know, a little bit kind of like Ghost.
Right.
Kind of. But not so kind of theatrical, right?
Yeah.
Like, this, they're more of like, still rock and roll.
They look like their albums and their video, at least one of their videos, looks straight out of like 1970, 1969.
Yeah, and it's like side-scrolling, like fucking you know, acid trip looking stuff.
It's
and
good stuff.
It's really good, man. That's a great band.
Church of the Cosmic Skull, look it up. Try to find the album, buy it.
Yeah, buy all of their stuff.
Before we get to the one-hit wonder, I want to bring up real quick a bit of news from Mondo Music side. Mondo from MondoTees.com is releasing the original Mission Impossible movie
Speaking
on vinyl.
Scientology, dude.
Yes.
What a segue.
Original music composed by Danny Elfman, and it's going to be on red or red and green vinyl, and it's going to be limited to 1,000 copies.
Do they even need to print, like, by Danny Elfman? Like, by default, doesn't he do all movies?
Pretty much.
That or John Williams, right? Who else is there? Henry Mancini.
Henry Mancini.
But seriously, like, it's like, fuck, dude. Look.
Michael Giacchino.
Think about how many great movies Danny Elfman has done the music for.
Tons.
Wait a minute. Isn't the mission... When you say Mission Impossible, which Mission Impossible?
The first one. Like
the very, very first one.
The one that came out in like the late 90s.
Okay. I thought you were thinking like the 60s. Because
no,
it wasn't...
No, no.
There was like in like Flint, right?
Well, no, that's James Bond. Mission Impossible
right,
is a TV series.
TV series.
Yeah.
So that I was like, well, fuck, maybe Danny Elfman did that stuff. Because that show was what, in like the 60s or so?
Yes. So this one is like the first Mission Impossible movie, which was directed by Brian De Palma.
Okay. But shouldn't that just all be Metallica songs?
No, that was part two with John Woo, actually.
Excuse me, sir. So I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on your foot.
That was that one. But yes, this is all the score. So there you go. That is coming out very, very soon.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time. Mission Impossible.
They're all out on 4K now. Also, if you haven't done it yet, Mondo actually has also released a re-released record of Big Trouble in Little China on two LPs. So pick up that if you can as well. I just wanted to bring that out.
Is that a Brian De Palma movie also?
No, that's a John Carpenter movie.
Fuck, I'm retarded, dude. And John can't say that anymore.
Let's get retarded in here.
Didn't they have to? They had to change that
to Let's Get It Started.
Fucking stupid. Way to go, yeah. People! You can't even be retarded anymore.
And then again with Mondo coming up, they're releasing the Punisher TV series, which is on Netflix on vinyl in a black and white vinyl color.
Is the guy? That's the guy that played Shane, right, in Walking Dead?
Correct.
I heard that show was really good.
It's excellent.
Not. I know Walking Dead. I know Walking Dead sucks.
But Tyler Bates did the music for it. Tyler Bates did the amazing music for Bubba Hotep with Bruce Campbell. It's fantastic.
Isn't he also Watchmen?
I think so, yes, yes, yes.
I like that movie.
I do too. All right, moving on to our one-hit wonder. We've done a few of these. We're very excited for this one.
I'm real stoked for this one.
Jacob, please just take us in.
I said that I'm excited for it, but now I forgot what it was. Is it Are You Ready for the Sex Girls?
It's not.
But for some reason, once I started, I was like, dude, if he passes this over to me, I'm going to flub it. And I did.
We thought about doing Are You Ready for the Sex Girls? Glenn Spires.
I'm looking at it right here. Correct, yes. And I was like, fuck yeah, nerds.
Nerds. But no, it's not that one. It is something else by...
I know what it is now.
It is from 1995.
Joan Osborne.
Yep.
The Bus on the God song. God on the Bus song.
The drugs have taken effect, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I did.
This song is called...
I did that on purpose.
What if God was one of us? probably remember Dr. Evil from Austin Powers singing this and then fucking up the words. But this song...
No, he nailed that.
But yeah, he did. But then he started, blah, blah, blue.
That's how the song goes. Because you just stop listening.
Oh, yeah, it's true. You hear that, it's done.
You can hear the bleeding in your ears.
So, it was released in March 1995 on the album Relish, produced by Rick Chertoff. It became a top 40 hit in November of that year. The song is the theme song for the American television series Joan of Arcadia. And the song was nominated for 3 Grammys, and it peaked at number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100.
What? It never got to a number? That's a fucking timeless song for 1995.
Eric Bazilian wrote the song.
He made $1 bazillion.
Yeah, Bazillion said, I wrote One of Us one night, the quickest song I ever wrote to impress a girl. Which works because we're married and have 2 kids.
Yeah, but if you wrote a song like that to get a chick, that song's all about God. She's not going to fucking want to bang you.
She did and married
him. Well, after they got married, yeah, I'm sure they saved it for marriage.
But we were in the middle of writing Joan's album, which was a group effort with Rick and Joan and Rob and I. And I did a demo of One of Us, this wacky little demo, which I ended up putting...
wacky little demo.
Which I ended up putting as a hidden track on the CD of my first solo record, and I played it for them. And it really hadn't even occurred to me that it was something that Joan might do, but Rick, in his wisdom, asked Joan if she thought she could sing it.
Hey,
and
dude.
I think it was better.
We need to dig up that demo.
Yes, seriously.
I mean, it was so good he hit it on his solo CD. That, man, that's one of those songs where that fucking confuses me, man. Like, how did that happen?
It's funny because what he says, he's like, she definitely could sing it, and we recorded a live demo of the guitar and her singing it, and I put the cassette in my car, and immediately after I put it in my car, I started practicing my Grammy speech.
Did they win the Grammy?
No, they didn't.
Oh. But he got nominated for that. Well, hey, that guy set out to fucking... He accomplished his goal, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
The song deals, of course, with various aspects of beliefs in God. But yeah,
I remember that. Do you remember the music video? It was like that's fucking the whole thing was like you were watching a haiku.
Yes,
right. It was like a fucking like a bum ran into like a fucking Lamborghini, right?
And yeah, then, with various attractions like roller coasters, Ferris wheels, the aquarium.
Yeah, yeah. None of it made sense. Yeah. Like it was kind of it's like a circus, but everyone's just dressed in normal clothes.
Yes, it is super interesting.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that's a Lilith Fair song.
So
how many copies did that thing sell?
Okay, let's look.
Because that's kind of like our shtick, right? Like we have to know the fucking we got to crunch these numbers, dude.
So Rock Parisian, who is like from the All Music, who did the All Online Music Guide or whatever, I think that's him, called the song a simple, direct. Excuse me, statement of faith, honest and adorned, one framed in a near perfect chorus and delectable Neil Young-ish guitar riff.
That's a stretch.
In 2007, the song was ranked at number 54 on VH1's 100 Greatest Songs of the 90s and number 10 of the network's 40 Greatest One-Hit Wonders of the
90s. Oh, damn. Top 40 one-hit wonder. See, that's now we're getting into the... That's what we should do is the top 40 list.
Mark Egan was bass guitar. Eric Bazillion was guitars. Bob Hyman was drums.
Bob Hyman, huh?
Yes.
Busted out.
In 1996, it sold 500,000. The song sold 500,000 copies, like the song.
The single. Wow. That's a lot of $1.99.
Yes. The theme song for CBS, Joan Arcadia, we talked about that. It played in Homicide, Life on the Street. It played in Vanilla Sky, Bruce Almighty.
It is in Bruce Almighty, dude. Yeah. That's a good movie, man.
And then covers of Awesome Powers of Spy Who Shagged Me. And they actually like are singing it like they're like Mini-Me's playing the piano with it and everything. That. It's great. Brad Roberts of the Crash Test Dummies, which we'll get to at some point on the One Hit Wonders list, recorded a cover of the song. Prince covered the song on its Emancipation album.
That's fucking weird.
Changing the phrase "just a slob" to "just a slave," like one of us, in several verses.
Oh, so Prince wrote it.
So,
I mean, do you remember the first time you heard that song?
I do. And I was like, it's almost hypnotizing because you're just kind of like swaying back and forth, like, what if God was word of us?
Yeah, you're just doing it like Scott Stapp, man.
Yeah.
He should do it.
It's the 90s.
He should do a cover of that.
Say, Scott Stapp, if you listening.
You want to kickstart your career, dude.
We're here,
that song's written. That's set up for him to just crush, dude.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Could you ever see like Tom Waits covering this?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Might be pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I'd like to hear Lee Hazlewood do it.
So, do you think Joan Osborne was hot in this album cover?
No, dude. Fuck no, man. She ain't. Look, like, let's just be honest.
Fuck no.
Where I'm coming from is like, I'm not. God freaks me out, man. Like anybody that's just always kind of talking about that, and that song is that's all it's doing, right?
So correct.
I'm instantly like,
well, it's not talking about like one God. It's talking about all beliefs and different.
That's types. Even worse for me because I'm like, God. Then it's all of them coming at me, right? It's like you're Thanos, right? And all the Avengers are coming towards you. Like you better fucking knuckle up, dude.
There you go. Got
Buddha and like the Rajneesh are coming at you, right? Like you've pissed them all off, you know. I don't know, man. It's too much. Religion's crazy to me. We won't get into that, but... No, she's not hot. Do you think she's fucking good looking? Google her.
I just did.
No, that was the album cover.
Yeah. Joan Osborne, we liked your song.
Man.
We haven't heard it in a while. If I find it on a single on 45, yeah, I'll most likely
buy it. When we find it in the clearance section at the Half Price Books for 49 cents, we'll get you to sign it for us.
Yeah. I'm in.
I'm going to get so much hate mail. email. It's not. They don't send mail anymore, huh?
I wish they did.
Is it better to have fans or like critics?
Both.
I don't know. I think it'd be better if you had your whole fan base was critics, right? Because then that means everyone would have to be listening to you.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Fans could just, I like that.
Yeah, they did.
Fucking whatever, you know? If you're still listening out there, go fuck yourself.
We still love you, though. And thank you for listening.
Yeah,
but also. Moving on to the main event.
Take that.
EC, Eric Clapton, most likely, or it's... is it argued that he's the best guitar player ever?
To ever answer that question is impossible, right? Like, it's like, who's the best wrestler ever?
Correct.
Anything. It's kind of a relative question. It's personal.
Like, right.
Personal taste, right? But I think most, I would say 90% of people would probably agree in the guitar world, people that are guitar players would say he's definitely in the top five of all of them, right? So when you start factoring in, you know, like, Chet Atkins and like Django Reinhardt, Jimi Hendrix, Jeff Beck, you know, Prince. Wes Montgomery. Yeah, Santana. Prince, not Santana. Okay. Come on. Is that a joke?
Did Santana play his guitar?
He does. So does Chad Kroeger. Joan Osborne held a guitar. Yes. Should we put her on this list?
No,
but dude. Clapton is...
Yes. And Clapton is the only three-time inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, once as solo, and then the Yardbirds and Cream.
I don't actually think that's true. I think that Stephen Stills is in there three times.
Really? This is the only three-time inductee, but who knows?
Or Neil Young.
Buffalo Springfield, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young.
And Neil Young. Himself. That's Yeah, it's Neil Young. It's three times. But anyway, yeah, dude, Clapton is the fucking man, dude. Had it not been for that pesky Jimi Hendrix,
yes,
Clapton would be there. He would have been, and it's not a contest. To be the best.
No,
you just are. Like
he just is. You know, they both had their styles. They both put guitar, blues, rhythm, rock on the map, I think, but Clapton, really, I just think he just. He did so much more. I mean, of course, he did so much more than Hendrix because Hendrix died so young. But Hendrix actually started out, interestingly enough, telling the story about his mother and his sister.
The Clapton?
Yeah.
I don't know exactly the details. But he got raised one way, thought it, and then at one point he figured out that that's not how it was. And then, like, his life was kind of upside down.
So basically,
down, you know?
Clapton grew up believing that his grandmother and... her second husband were his parents, not the case, and that his actual mother, his mother was actually his older sister.
Yeah, his sister.
He grew up thinking that until much older. But yes, that is what, that's how he kind of grew up, and no wonder he did a bunch of shit.
The thing with Clapton to where, from a musical standpoint, the easiest way to pinpoint his greatness of how great he really is, and was, and he still is. He's still fucking great. I've seen him numerous times live, and that dude is a fucking force live, right. Dude.
I've seen him live, too.
He's incredible.
And
his band is always phenomenal. But that first record that he played on with John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, they're sitting on the front of it. It's the four of them that make up the Blues Breakers, and Clapton's holding a fucking comic book called Beano. And the guitar playing on that album is the fucking, like, zenith of, like, blues, electric blues guitar playing. That's the fucking record. Because he, a British kid, got a hold of some fucking black American blues records. And something just that intertwined, right, in two different totally parts of the world.
Right.
That couldn't probably be polar opposite, right? Like, he grew up in, like, fucking post-World War II, like, you know, not great living conditions in different, probably, you know, like, he moved around, I think, a lot when he was a kid. But that music, that black blues Delta music fucking found the right kid at the right time in England. And he fucking took hold to it, like, the greatness of that dude is, like, you can't even really put it into words, you know?
Well, I mean, yeah, the Yardbirds and John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, I mean...
Specifically, that
album.
Blues Breakers record,
right.
Man, that is for rock guitar, blues guitar, pure tones... That is the angriest, most aggressive, like, suave guitar playing you could ever fucking hear, dude. Like, it is like getting pummeled by a fucking freight train, dude.
But, you know, it's Eric Clapton, his influence were mostly like Freddie King and Otis Rush and B.B. King.
Black blues players.
Yeah. So, you know, that and along with some of his other albums and songs, that's where he, and that's where he got to start with the Yardbirds and the Blues Breakers for sure.
See, but the even with the people you just named, right, like with Freddie King, right, Texas Cannonball, great fucking guitar player. Clapton had that extra spark that those guys didn't have. He is a better guitar player and a more powerful sound than a B.B. King.
Right.
He just happens to be a white British dude.
Yeah.
But he just fucking exudes it, man. Like, as soon as that guitar, as soon as both his hands are on that instrument, dude.
Yeah.
That's him. And it's the most, like, I remember the first time I saw him and I was just fucking, I could imagine it had been, you know, seeing like Hendrix for the first time or, you know, somewhere like that. I saw him in probably 2001 or so.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was called like the End of the Road Tour or something like that. It was half acoustic set and then he played electric.
Yeah.
But man, the vibe of the guy, like when he came on stage, like it was almost, I guess, how people see like a Pope, right? You know, or like the president going down the street.
Yeah.
There's like this fucking mythical, like fucking aura to them. And, you know, they're like a higher being type person, right?
Right.
I don't really get that vibe from hardly anyone ever. But Clapton was a person, when I saw him live, I was like, dude, that's magic. Like, there's something about him. And I have never had that feeling the three times I saw Dylan. I was like, well, there's that old dude walking out on stage.
Yeah.
Just going to croon the whole time.
Right.
Fucking Clapton brings the heat, dude. Like, he don't have a fucking bad show.
No, he doesn't.
Maybe in the 70s, you know, when he was like had his alcohol problem and fucking, you know, his heroin. He's lucky to be alive.
No, he is.
I mean, he's had a crazy fucking life.
But anything that Clapton touched, it went crazy. Like the Yardbirds, Cream, Blind Faith. Dude. You know,
Derek and the Dominoes, man. Yes. The Dwayne, like one of my favorite albums ever, man. I was listening to it on the way over here, actually. And the guitar playing on that album, the songwriting, all of it, dude. It's like, and it's very American sounding. Like, it's an American sounding rock and roll record, but it's this British blues guy.
Yeah.
Who got like immersed in like country folk stuff, like people like Delaney and Bonnie, you know, and like Southern swamp type music, you know, like he aced the blues right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Like to a level no one had ever seen before. Like people were spray painting like on walls and like Clapton is God, you know, Clapton is God, seeing it on walls all over the world.
Right.
He was like this fucking alien, man. Like this, who's this Clapton guy? And then you hear him play and you're just floored like by what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it was such a fucking, like, it's a force, but it's not really like in your face and like aggressive to the point where it's like punishing. It's very pleasant and like, fuck, his nickname, Slowhand.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, couldn't be a more fitting name, you know? He is incredible, dude.
He is. What do you think about his good friendship and collaboration with George Harrison?
Man, one of the best, interesting, probably, stories in rock and roll ever. Because they switched wives.
Did they really?
So Layla, Clapton wrote Layla for Patty Harrison, which at the time was George Harrison's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like in love with her. But and George Harrison and Clapton were best friends.
Okay.
So they ended up switching wives, right? They swapped wives,
uh-huh.
Remained friends through all of that. And I mean, that's like just a testament to a fucking great friendship, I guess. I mean, I would never, that's something I would never personally do, but those dudes they're rock stars. I mean, that was an era of rock star where they were actually living like rock stars. I mean, They weren't fucking looking the part and playing it.
But they were on each other's albums, and they were great friends.
Fucking Clapton played on the White Album, Beatles. I mean,
yeah.
Why My Guitar Gently Weeps. They're.
And then didn't Clapton also play on George's All Things Must Pass?
All Things Must Pass. Yeah. I mean, they were just fucking great friends, dude. Like, and then
that's super cool.
Dude, well, all things must pass. I mean, we dedicate a whole episode to that. Dude.
Yeah, well, I thought about mentioning George Harrison, but we'll get to him at some point.
But even, you know, so you do John Mayall, Blues Breakers, then bam, you jump to the Yardbirds, right?
Right.
Fucking huge.
And yes.
You got two other great guitar players through that band, and Jimmy Page.
Yep.
Led Zeppelin, and then Jeff Beck.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, Clapton does that. Bam. Next tier.
Cream. Yeah.
Fucking explain that, dude.
Yeah.
Like, get out of the way. And they only made, I think, two albums.
Yeah, two. Yeah.
Disraeli Gears, Under Wheels of Confusion. Uh-huh. And then they have an album called Goodbye. So three, and then I think there's like a fourth live album.
Okay.
Okay, so bam, crushes it. What's next?
Blind Faith.
Bam, crushes that. One album, done. Right? Yeah. Steve Winwood, Ginger Baker, Rick Gretsch.
Yeah.
Fucking killer band. Bam, fast forward. Derek and the Dominoes. Dwayne Allman, Layla. Huge fucking song, right?
Yep.
I mean, solidified his career at that point as a fucking great songwriter. Because that's an incredible fucking song.
Right.
Bam, fast forward. Solo career. Like, this fucking first solo Clapton album.
Self-titled.
Yeah. You just look at the players on it. Leon Russell, you know, Delaney and Bonnie, Bobby Whitlock, Bobby Keys, who played sax in the Stones. And I think I chronologically got off. I think this first Clapton album actually came out before Derek and the Dominoes. Because this came out in 70. I think Derek and the Dominoes came out in 71.
Okay.
So if for all you other fellow music nerds out there, I may have corrected myself, or I probably should have stopped talking an hour ago.
No way. No, but
yeah, dude, he always kind of progressed his career until his demons got the fucking best of him, dude. Because when he got bad, he got real fucking bad.
Because it was in his big success in the 70s when he started with all the crazy romantic shit, the drugs, the alcohol, addictions and stuff. And I think that's kind of, I mean, he never fell off. Like, he kept putting out records.
He fell off for a long. Like, he would go into, like, little spurts of, like, hiding.
Yeah.
And then he would come out, and then, like, he would have, like, a, you know, he'd have, there's pictures of him where he's got a real long beard, and he's got big glasses on, and he just looks like a bum, you know, like, doesn't look healthy, you know, like, just looks sad. And, but yeah, he's, man, that guy's had a fucking wild life, dude.
He has had a crazy
wild
life.
And this kid, like, you know, was when this kid went out of that window in the hotel room, like, where most people would just go, you know what? I'm going to hang it up, and I'm not going to fucking do this music thing anymore. How successful was he at that point in the 90s? He's still Eric Clapton. He's huge. He took a horrible thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And fucking wrote a song about it, which I don't, you know, Tears in Heaven, great song, but I'm never really going to, you know, listen to it.
Right.
But to take a situation like that and make a light out of it the way he did.
Yeah.
Because there's no telling how many people that song probably, like, helped out through a rough patch or something. But he had to go through some shit to write it. And think about all the stuff he'd been through up to that point. To just keep even going, dude. That's a testament to that dude's character and greatness, dude.
That's what
Eric Clapton is a fucking god, dude. Like, I mean, Clapton is god.
And he's played with so many different people, but he also at the same point just kind of seems like he doesn't want to be in the press. He just kind of like, he just goes out and plays.
Yeah, he's a true musician, man. Like, he just likes to play his guitar. And write some cool songs every now and then.
Yeah,
he does have an album called Old Sock that came out a couple of years ago, and it's just, I was like, man, who okayed that? Like, you're gonna let Eric Clapton really have an album called Old Sock?
Yeah,
like, seems like in the creative department we could have probably done a little better than that.
So, what do you think of his album Journeyman?
Journeyman, which one is that? Is that the fucking Robert Johnson album?
That is the one where he kind of found sobriety.
Let me see the
cover. In 1989.
Oh yeah, that was a big. I remember that album.
Reached number 16 on the Billboard chart.
Yeah, that was a. There was a huge.
But it's like a lot of, like, there's George Harrison and Ray Charles are on it. Linda Womack. Very interesting. Very.
Yeah, well, Clapton is one of those guys where at a certain point I stopped listening to him.
1989, yeah.
You know, like in probably the mid-70s, I don't really listen to a lot of Clapton after that. Now, granted, I've seen him live.
Several times, yeah.
But the albums that come out, I'm like, eh. I mean, that's not really my thing so much anymore. But, you know, I could listen to, you know, Cream any time of the day. And the guy that produced those albums was in a little band called Mountain,
mm-hmm.
Mississippi Queen. The bass player in that band produced all the Cream records. This dude named Felix Pappalardi.
Yeah.
And that guy, without Felix Pappalardi, Cream wouldn't have had that sound. They would have sounded somewhat like that.
Yeah.
But that guy single-handedly created the Cream sound. He was like a Phil Spector type mixing type person. He was real heavy-handed on a mixing board. So that's what he told Clapton. He goes, "Hey man, you're playing loud. My guitar player, this Leslie West guy, he weighs 300 pounds.
Yeah.
He plays at this volume. Try that." And then hook Clapton into a Marshall on 10, right? Two of them. Bam. Get out of the fucking way, dude. Like, you're going to get fucking pummeled.
What do you think about his song Cocaine, who was written by J.J. Cale?
J.J. Cale, dude. We could do a whole week of podcasts for J.J. Cale, dude.
But, like, this is one of those songs where somebody else made it way popular than what it was.
And him and Clapton were great friends.
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, a lot of, you know, the Clapton songs, some of them are, a lot of them are kind of covers. But that's a great song, dude, where most people would deny addiction or, like, a problem or something.
Yeah.
Dude, Clapton's like, always been very upfront about a lot. I mean, pretty much everything. There's a lot of transparency when he really doesn't have to be.
Right.
Right? But he's a true artist. Like, he's the fucking real deal.
And so he's had studio albums wise 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. He's had 22 studio albums.
Just solo.
Just solo, yeah. Just Eric Clapton, just this 22 recent, the most recent one, I Still Do, in 2016. He's had two collaboration albums, one with J.J. Cale.
B.B. King.
And B.B. King, Ride With The King. And also, let's bring up one of his most famous performances was MTV Unplugged, Eric Clapton.
The Tears in Heaven, man. That was like the Steve Harvey suit Clapton era, you know?
Yeah.
The big suit and the big gray pants.
I like the Steve Harvey suit.
It is, dude. Like, that suit has shoulder pads.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, we have a substitute teacher today. There's shoulder pads on the chair.
But that was a big defining moment in his career. And it got a large number of younger people into Eric Clapton with that.
That song got a lot of, it's a morbid song. But that song got a lot of people laid.
Yeah, it did.
I mean,
Tears in Heaven.
Think about it.
Like the movie God Was One, or like the song was God Was One for Chick, man.
A lot of contemplating was going on during that song, dude. Yeah. Like Tears in Heaven comes on, they're on the floor.
But I remember in the year 2000. In the year 2000.
Zon. Do you think Louis C.K. is masturbating bear?
God, I hope. Yes. I hope he is.
Think about that.
Yes. But I'm so happy that a blues legend as B.B. King and Eric Clapton got together and did the album Riding With The King. And it's coolly cool because, like, even the cover of it looks like they're just having a good time.
They played a lot when Clapton was younger. Like, when Cream would play, they would... A lot of artists would have over, they'd say, well, okay, we're going to play these big shows at like Royal Albert Hall. We want Howlin' Wolf to come over and open for us. And these British, who's Howlin' Wolf?
Who's
this Howlin' Wolf character? They'd say, well, it's this, you know, guy we like to listen to. He's in America. You know, he's somewhere down in Georgia. You need to go get him and then bring him to Royal Albert Hall because we want him to open for us.
Yeah.
So they would seek out artists they would like. But there's some really great pictures of, like, Clapton in the 70s with his big afro sitting next to B.B. King playing guitar.
He was,
you know, where a lot of, you know, artists of that time were, you know, stealing, doing a lot of theft from music and saying, hey, I wrote that, like your boys in Canned Heat said they wrote Going Up the Country, and they knew they didn't.
But isn't Going Up Country? I didn't think that was originally them.
They said they wrote it.
Weird.
And then they got in this huge legal thing. Yeah, I'm not really much of a fan of people who do that. Led Zeppelin. That's why I stopped liking Led Zeppelin. But Clapton, on the other hand, was, well, hey, you guys think I'm good. There's these guys in America that this is the sound, this is where what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, this is where I'm got it from. And so those people went and researched where, you know, people back then, they actually wanted to know, well, where did it come from? Like,
yeah.
What's he listening to? People don't do that nowadays. On to the next one.
Right.
Fucking use them and lose them.
Do you like Clapton's song Revolution?
I don't even know that song.
You want a revolution, revolution now. Is that not?
Don't know. I don't. If that is a Clapton song, I'm not sure of it. But
I thought it was.
If it is, that sounds like an era I would not like.
Huh. Okay. I thought maybe I'm wrong.
I doubt that.
Okay. Well, thank you. but
you, I just know you like being lied to.
I do. Well, shit. But his.
What's your favorite Clapton album?
I really like 461 Ocean Boulevard.
That's your favorite one?
I mean, I love Jesus that album. God, why would you mean fucking, Jesus?
You don't mean that.
I like
you
it.
You would pick that over fucking like this first Clapton album? Are you kidding me?
I like Willie and the Hand Jive. I like I shot the sheriff cover. I like it all. I like 461.
I mean, that's just weird to me because I guess it's
But I like Slow Hand too.
Yeah, but that's another album that's so kind of, it's the slower speed.
The 461 Ocean Boulevard is his second album.
Yeah, I know, but it's that fucking, like, it's not the, on the first album, he's got, like, that southern sound.
Correct.
There's not, it's not a lot of ballads.
But, like, you're talking solo, but, you know, there's Israeli Gears, which I love consistently.
No, I'm saying of any album he's played on, not solo Clapton, of anything he's played
on. Oh, any album he's played on. Holy shit. Well, probably. Oh,
that's why when you picked that, I was so like, good. Dude, really? 461?
Disraeli Gears or All Things Must Pass, maybe?
Man, his plan on All Things Must Pass is the shit, dude.
It's so good. Like
The Art of Dying, that, you know, that fucking song on there. He just plays the same guitar part for like the whole 2 minutes and 30 seconds. He's just diddly 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 diddly. But the way he's so, like, if you just tried to do it on guitar, you could hit all the right notes. But it's, he evokes that feeling. Like he from hand to string, he's got that vibe, man. Like, he's fucking, it's scary to watch him play. Like, an incredible fucking talent, dude. He's Eric fucking Clapton, dude.
He's just a badass. Yeah, All Things Must Pass. And he was on the Cloud 9 one, the George Harrison Cloud 9 album, like his crazy 80s album with this, like, what is it? Devil's Radio and Got My Mind Set on You. That is Eric Clapton. And
you know, Phil Collins was in Eric Clapton's touring band for long time.
Yes.
So there was some 80s steps in the Clapton.
And Jeff Lynne of ELO was on that George Harrison one too.
Yeah. Well, he
and Elton John. It's crazy. That
only great musicians tend to gravitate towards other great musicians. So not really surprising that those people would make music together. We should do a fucking podcast on Elton John, dude.
Yes, we do.
I fucking love early Elton John.
Man, I'm so great. He's played with Cyndi Lauper, Carole King, Buckwheat Zydeco, Sting, Lionel Richie, Roger Waters, Pete Townsend, Howlin' Wolf, Leon Russell, Rod Stewart, Bob Marley, Otis Rush, Steve Winwood, Buddy Guy, Frank Zappa. It's crazy.
Dude, well, Clapton is, like, one of those people that transcends everything and everyone.
I would imagine he's just a fun guy to hang out with, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, let's get Clapton over here and just record on one of these songs.
Well, I think Clapton, though, is also, you know, he obviously beats to his own drum, you know what I mean?
Like, well, he goes and he makes it awesome.
Yeah,
and he knows it.
Midas touch, right?
Like, right.
He's fucking, that guy just gets it, man. Like, and he, as a musician, the one thing that's the easiest to do is, like, overplay. Like, when you think you're not playing enough, then you'll just want to do too much, right? And you kind of float and shit all over the song. Clapton is a fucking is a great example of how to play to a song.
I wonder why Clapton never did Heal the World with Michael Jackson. And
he was fucking doing We Are the World.
Wasn't
he on that? We are the world.
Well, Michael Jackson was doing We Are the World. Yeah, and Lionel Richie, but Clapton is not on that.
That's surprising. He must have been on the...
Because they recorded that song over one night right after the Grammys, because that's when everybody was in town to record it.
Yeah.
So everybody besides Michael...
Isn't like Dee Snider is on there?
No, not Dee Snider. But it's like Willie Nelson, Bob Dylan, Huey Lewis,
Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles. A lot of big people of that time.
They rode together.
Yeah, well, actually, they did. They drove, but in the make, there's a 60-minute documentary on We Are the World, and it's really cool because you actually get to see Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles actually read Braille music together and learning their parts. And then when Cyndi Lauper was there, she was like maybe 19 at the time. She had all this fucking jewelry on and necklaces from the Grammys, and Quincy Jones had to tell her, "Darling, can you take off all your jewelry? It's making sounds." In your mic. And she's like, "Oh yeah," she takes it all off. But then in the Dan Aykroyd was there and Bette Midler, but what was funny, in the middle of them recording, Harry Belafonte was there, and everybody broke out into the Banana Boat song, like the day-o, and they just all sang it. And that's in the documentary, which is super cool.
That, you shouldn't have had that gummy, dude. What is, how, where did Clapton go in this whole thing?
Clapton wasn't there. That's why I'm asking. Yes, Clapton did Revolution. I see it right now. But I was just...
He doesn't have time for all that silliness, dude. He doesn't record with amateurs wearing jewelry in the vocal booth.
But We Are the World was in the 80s, and he was a big part of the 80s, and I just don't know why he wasn't there.
Because I'm telling you, there were streaks in his career where he became a recluse.
Okay.
Like, he would go into hermit mode, right? Like,
yeah.
Drug addiction would overtake him, or, like, alcohol addiction would overtake him. Like, he was a big, like, when I was, like, you know, starting to do, like, the no drinking thing, and, like, man, you know what? This fucking alcohol is fun and all, but it's, like, sometimes it's a really stupid thing. And he's a huge, you know, believer in, like, the fucking 10-step program, like the AA thing. Firm believer in that, dude. He says it saved his life. And he would on tour go to meetings and stuff. But that's a guy who, you know, where most people would put it behind the curtain, you know, and not even, like, put it out in the public eye, dude. He's just, you know, life goes on. Like, a lot of people go through some shit.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
So, yeah.
The real deal, man.
He is the real deal for sure. But yeah, he is an amazing dude.
That's why there was a Coke shortage in the 80s.
It was Eric Clapton.
Clapton was out and about, dude. Put it up. Vacuum nose.
Eric Clapton and Vince Gill did all of the cocaine.
Dude, I love me some Vince Gill, man.
We'll do another episode of Vince Gill.
Vince Gill is one of the best guitar players of all time.
We will talk about him soon. But yeah, Eric Clapton, and that wraps up...
Eric Crapton.
Oh, Eric Crapton.
Don't they say that?
In South Park, I think so.
Yeah.
But Eric Clapton, we talked about Randy Savage, we talked about Joan Osborne.
Ooh, one of us. What if God was one of us?
Yes. And our one-hit wonder, of course, we just said her, Joan Osborne.
Joanne.
And be sure to check out that new band we mentioned.
Slayer.
Yeah, Slayer, not Slayer.
Church of the Cosmic Skull.
Yes, Church of the Cosmic Skull.
Where are they from? They're like from England, I think.
It's awesome. But yes, we'll be back next week with another episode. Hopefully we'll have...
An ELO update for you.
An ELO update and a guest, Jonathan Kimbrell. But until then...
Oh, yeah, Jonathan's coming?
I hope so.
Hell yeah.
Find Jacob where on Instagram at...
Just Instagram. At Scrum True Lessons. If you can't find me, that's fine. No problem.
There you go.
I'm not mad.
He's not mad. And you can find me at boomstickcomics.com and highdefdigest.com. And on iTunes under the Multimedia Men podcast. We love you. We'll see you soon. Until then, listen to Disraeli Gears.
Backwards.
Backwards.